from Bondi Beach to the world. 14 correspondents in 7 countries. Wherever in the world you are, we are never far away. This is the world famous Bondi Tunes. Bondi Tunes Australia.
This is Bondi Tunes International Broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, where the time is 2 minutes past 3 in the afternoon on a Tuesday. And I'm joined by our North America correspondent, Thomas Booker, in, San Antonio de Bayar, where it's Monday night just after 10 p.m. local time. Welcome to our broadcast.
I'm here. How's it going?
I got to tell you, it's just you and me this week, and I'm thinking, well, the others don't drink anyway. I haven't been drinking alcohol for weeks.
Henry, I'm sorry about the last session that I didn't offer one up to. Let's go ahead and deal with this right now.
Yeah, okay, let's do that.
Yeah, listen. There, how's that?
Oh, fantastic. Cheers to that.
It should be there after a little bit of a propagation delay, but
no, it's here already.
Wow, man. Miracle of the internet.
I said I wouldn't talk about the interview with Oprah, with Harry and his wife. And, it has to be talked about just briefly, if that's okay with you, because I notice in America, Meghan Markle, I see American side of this, and it's interesting that this in Britain, they're going nuts about this. It's very divided. But this was the biggest story in America, the biggest number one story in America. The Americans seem to be as obsessed with royalty as the British. Thomas, what do you think?
The United States is, there are certain sectors of the viewing public that is obsessed with wealth and, power. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of this thing that they admire from a distance, which has always been a bit of an absurdity. There's no context to it. There's no background. It's what the history is and what the dynamics are. They don't see any of that. They just see rich people. And that's basically all it is, rich, glamorous people.
But do you think Americans are jealous because you don't have your own royalty there?
Well,
I'm not saying you personally, but
we have Hollywood stars and there are people. Yeah. Who are admired just for being themselves and they're being prominent and and then when the politics come into it is a bit that's a separate absurdity. As you've seen, we had a king briefly over the past 4 years and he's gone.
Say you had a king over the
well yeah, I mean
talking
I would
about,
be
talking about Trump. Trump.
Yes.
Okay.
A man to admire. It's complicated. It's a complicated cultural thing. They are fascinated with bling, basically.
Yes.
And wealth and style and fashion. And, we have our tabloids as they have tabloids in England. And there is a component of our society that's that. Superficial and shallow, and of course,
the tabloids in Britain. And I was a rookie working at a newspaper in Ireland, making tea and attempting to write for the printed press. But in Britain, I grew up with British newspapers, and they were appalling then. If you look back to Princess Di, and all the dramas that she had with Charles, and him going out with Camilla. Parker Bowles, and all that drama is not gone, and I think that's what Meghan is attesting to. Okay, I don't want to stick with this because we're going to be talking with our Australian correspondent in Melbourne, Melissa Grima, about this in the show. Let's get to some real news. The U.S., and I'm reading Reuters here. I love Reuters. Their headline is U.S. alarmed by frequency of attacks on Saudi after Houthis target oil heartland. I don't know how to pronounce that. What's going on with this?
There's a okay. I don't know how much that's tied up with Yemen, with the revolution in Yemen, but the, there is on the okay. Saudi Arabia is an empire. It's like this little, you know, it's a principality. Of course, it's this powerful block in the Middle East, and they have things nibbling on their borders. And I'm not too sure what the exactly the Houthis issue is. I can't really speak to that intelligently, but there are, you know, they have the Yemen issue going on, and the ongoing atrocities that they're perpetrating in Yemen. And Saudi Arabia is surrounded by people who hate them. And
yes, I think, this is true.
And I think it's with justification. And this, there has been a history of retaliation and atrocity, and over however many years, what, since World War II, what, 80 years of their existence. They're a fiefdom. They're an authority. They're, by definition, since they're ruled by royalty, they are an authoritarian society. There are aspects of their society that, to me, are reprehensible, but they're still there. And the reason
and of course, reprehensible is a good word if you're coming from our angle in democratic societies. What intrigues me is that the United States, just to quote Reuters again, on Monday expressed alarm at genuine at a genuine security threats to Saudi Arabia from Yemen's Iran-aligned Houthis and elsewhere in the region. I'm guessing the reason the U.S. is so concerned is not because they love them, but because of oil.
Oil, yes.
It's all about oil.
They're still sitting on that damn pool of oil, and they're still powerful because of it. And this is, I hate to, the whole issue about the Middle East, it goes all the way back to World War One, and it seems like everything, going back to royalties, talking about royalty and talking about England, talking about privileges and talking about empire, every disturbance, every instability that we see around the world right now, even including China, has been a product of this damnable colonization and iron grip on colonies. And Saudi Arabia is no different. I mean, that was, that whole area was an invention at the end of World War One, one that T.E. Lawrence opposed.
Right.
If you remember Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes,
that's
going back.
And yes, it goes back. But I mean, and that's what I'm thinking about these days, is how, what the consequences of all of that are. And I was just thinking about this afternoon. I was staring, you know, listening to this, all the stuff going on in Saudi Arabia, around Saudi Arabia, and that whole mess, and also think in conjoining that with all the royals, and I'm just thinking about how screwed up the planet has been.
Yes,
because of the damnable colonization. You know,
yes,
I was thinking that the, you know, China is now an aggressive force that's in you know, it basically has hostility, and it wants dominance. It wants to expand itself as far as it can and take over, and even threaten Australia. Possibly.
Yes, yes.
And all of that is the result of the damnable British, you know, it goes back to the Opium Wars and the British destabilization of that whole nation back in the 1850s.
Yes, when Britain had so much control over the world. I just want to switch subjects here. The U.S. House, again, Reuters. I love Reuters. Did I mention that?
No, they are good. They're credible news, yes.
The U.S. House will take up the Senate's $1.9 trillion coronavirus bill by Wednesday. Pelosi is kicking ass, Thomas.
She is. Well, I mean, she finally, okay, she has just enough power. Right now we're on the razor thin edge.
Wasn't it by one vote or something?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Everything is a razor thin. I mean, it indicates how basically the entire, you could take a razor blade and slice the United States in two, and you know, they're like two different nations.
Yes. I think, you know, that reminds me, I'm sure the U.S. had a civil war once upon a time.
Yes, they did.
It could happen again.
Another historic complication. Well, that civil war is still never ended. I mean, this is what you're seeing as a result of it all these 70 years later.
Yes.
Yes, we basically have, first of all, when it started out, when Trump first came into power, he initiated the standard conservative solution to all of our economic woes by cutting taxes on the wealthiest and disenfranchising the lower income and less what they might perceive as the lesser portion of society. And as a result, that now that there's a desperate need to send aid to all the people who are out of work and are in desperate financial straits and are in grave danger of losing their homes, losing their housing. That's a great disruption on what would be termed, to refer to the royals as the lower classes.
Yes.
Royals going. But all of this, you know, they're all screaming and screeching and in horror at the $1.9 trillion that it would take to bail out the nation, which is basically what Biden is doing is trying to revive the New Deal. He's trying to create another version of it to save the nation financially. And the fury of the conservatives is just really... something that just is a mind-boggling because they've accepted all the cuts to the tax cuts and the gutting of the finances of the nation, and they've done this throughout every Republican administration, and always left the economy of the United States in tatters by the time they're done with it because of the damnable, stupid financial principles. So.
The thing, Thomas, is it's not quite a done deal. It's passed the Senate, but it's got to be approved again by the House before it can make its way to Biden's desk so he can sign the damn thing.
Yes, and it's going to have to go through. There are going to be a little bit more, you know, ripping at the edges, nibbling at the edges of it before it can go through. So it's not going to be everything they wanted because compromises are going to have to be made and deals are going to have to be cut to get the thing through.
But all in all, it is a done deal. Is that fair to say?
I'm going to say yes. At present, it is a done deal. It's just a matter of getting the proverbial ball across the goal. But once it's not going to be without some compromises and some.
Do you think, all in all, with 2 minutes left, do you think that this is lifting the spirits of Americans?
I think it's going to be lifting the spirits of the people who are desperately in need. And I think it's going to be lifting the spirits of the people who have small businesses and have are under the threat of the shutdowns and the threat of the COVID virus. That is also being exacerbated by all the Republicans now suspending the mask rules in all their states, which could be causing an even greater health catastrophe and later on an economic catastrophe. But at present, it's a godsend to all the people who need it. I'm pleased to see it go through in whatever shape it gets through, just to get the help of the people.
Finally, do you feel confident as a citizen of the United States? I know you live in Texas, but despite that, Thomas Booker, do you feel confident now? Like, do you feel you're at, you know, in America, that you're over the hill in terms of the bad side of this, and things are going to improve? No,
it's not going to. I mean, the thing is that I'm optimistic about the fact that COVID will be controlled, and you know that we will get through that. And I think that's going to happen sooner than people are expecting. I think it's going to be by summer. We may be having it under control, and we may be starting to return to normal by then.
The new normal. And
the new normal. But in terms of the other issues, the other recovery of the economy and everything else, I think this will be an economic rebound. But once again, I think it's going to benefit the wealthiest And I don't see it. I just see it's going to be some salvation that in terms of nothing but survival, but not thriving.
Yeah, it's such a shame that, you know, as you said, it's always the wealthy who seem to gain out of these disastrous situations.
Yes, that's how they play it. And that's how the game's been played. And that's...
It's always the way, though, isn't it? I mean,
it's always the way, and it's very frustrating because it basically means that the if only that there was a mobilization of other portions of society, if only there was a consistent, reliable voting bloc that the Democrats could have, as opposed... I mean, the Republicans can always count on old, wealthy white people.
And they always will. We're out of time. Thomas, thank you so much for joining me here. We'll have the other team, part of the team, together next week. Thank you. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world, and I'm Adam Devlin in Melbourne, Australia.
And I'm Melissa Grima, also in Melbourne, Australia.
And I'm Henry in Sydney.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the planet now.
Now, just breaking news as we record, the Premier Daniel Andrews, Victorian Premier, is actually not very well at the moment, and we'll talk about that in a second. I just, for our listeners in North America, he is like the Andrew Cuomo of Victoria, in the sense that the New York governor, Andrew Cuomo, every day for about 65 days came out and basically did briefings on the state of coronavirus in New York. Here in Australia, in the state of Victoria, Daniel Andrews does the same, daily briefings. And he's been doing it for about 10 million days in a row, and he took a holiday. What happened next, guys?
he had a short break over the weekend down in the Mornington Peninsula. And this morning he slipped on some slippery stairs, and he's now in hospital with broken ribs and damaged vertebrae.
This is quite serious, Melissa. I mean, you know, I thought, okay, he's had a fall. I'm 58 years old. He's younger than me. And I'm just wondering how dangerous this is, because he's in intensive care.
I just wanted to say he worked over 100 consecutive days.
Thank you.
and maybe this is what the guy needed to get a break. No pun intended.
Oh.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, sorry.
It's a little bit disturbing. He's worked very, very hard, and one has to wonder if the injuries are exacerbated because of all the stress that he's been under.
Yeah, look, I think the amount of stress he's under can't be underestimated at this point. I mean, we're coming up to 12 months since we've went into our first lockdown. And he's got to have had the toughest year in the last 12 months. I can't imagine anyone who would want to swap positions with him.
Yeah, absolutely. He's done it tough with the press, that's for sure.
So, you know, thankfully, though, these, you know, broken ribs, they'll heal. They've just said damaged vertebrae. They haven't said that that's broken. That's also a good sign, that he hasn't broken his back. I would just have to give him the time to heal, a few days in intensive care. The good thing is there's no head injuries, so he can still do his job.
unlike many other politicians. We wish Daniel Andrews the very best. Now, Four Corners is an investigative program here on the ABC in Australia. We've covered this last week as well. Last night, though, they aired part two of its expose into the federal parliament's toxic culture and into the historical rape allegation facing the Attorney General Christian Porter. Now, the minister strenuously denies he raped the woman when they were both teenagers. That was 1986, when Porter and a debate colleague, who we'll call Kate, spent a lot of time together in university. Decades later, she claimed he raped her. She committed suicide after making a statement to New South Wales police. Adam, can a case like this go to court, given the alleged victim has died, and/or can there be an inquiry into this?
Yeah, it really can't go to proceed in the courts. She had not fully signed her statement. She'd given a statement, but it hadn't been signed into to be admissible. before she then withdrew it and suicided. So I actually indicated at the time when this first broke that, you know, it would go back to the police, but the police were unable to do anything with this because they can't, you know, judge any of the evidence that she's put forward with her because she's dead. And so, as expected, the New South Wales Police came back and said, look, unfortunately, the evidence that we have is inadmissible at this point. And she unfortunately had withdrew the complaint and died before any further evidence or statements could be taken from her. So it really is finished in the courts, in the legal courts, criminal courts anyway. Of course, there's always the potential for a civil case from her family against Christian Porter at some point if they wish to go down that path. I don't know if they will. However, in regards to... So where do we go now? We've now got the first law officer of the country off on stress leave because he's been accused of rape. It can't go anywhere in the court because the accuser has died. So the only way out of this now, really, I mean, is to hold... to bring in a retired judge, an eminent judge, and hold a parliamentary inquiry into this. It's the only way out of this. The Prime Minister, of course, on Friday said there will be no inquiry, that, you know, he's not a police force in himself, and, you know, you've got to leave these things up to the police and the courts. And normally that would be correct. However, there are a number of precedents for a parliamentary inquiry when the courts can't handle something.
Yes.
The most recent being Dyson Heydon. So it is really important here. And this isn't going to go away. This is something that the Prime Minister doesn't seem to have a grasp on at this point, and that is that him simply saying, well, the courts have looked at this and the police have looked at this and they can't do anything, so, you know, wipe our hands off it and move on to the next scandal.
And
that's not going to work. That's not going to wash with the Australian people. I've spent the last week, really. Well, this is almost 2 weeks now that this scandal's been going on. We had a week with, we didn't know who the minister was, and now, you know, we've had a 4 or 5 days of knowing who the minister was. And the issue is that because it's the first law officer of the country, and we're talking about a serious crime here, one of the most serious crimes on our statutes. And that question mark will remain over him until he is cleared in some way. And what's happened so far in regards to the New South Wales Police has not cleared him.
When I heard his press conference, I wasn't really privy to the background of the story in as much as what he was being accused of, except that it was rape and it was historic rape. And listening to him speak, I was inclined to believe he was innocent at first, and I felt sympathetic to him in a way that, imagine being accused of something that you didn't do, how horrible would that be? But the more he spoke, the less I believed him. And some of the reasons for that is he struck me as being incredibly insincere. He struck me as being a victim himself. And the fact that he didn't actually read the accusations penned against him, and neither did Scott Morrison, that's extremely concerning. How do you deny allegations when you don't know the extent of what they are?
That's a very interesting question, that one, Melissa. You know, if he hadn't read the letter that this woman sent, how did he know what he was defending himself against? You know, he had a lot of detail in that press conference that he was talking about. Now, if he didn't read that stuff, how did he know that stuff was in the allegations? I know that some of this has been in the press previously, but still, you know, even his recollections to me weren't quite legit in some way. There was something about the way that he was recollecting things that just didn't ring true to me. And I'll give you an example. He said that he remembers her ironing shirts. There were three boys and this woman were away and on a debating team, and they were staying in a hotel and they were getting ready to go out for dinner. And he said, well, he was prompted, did he remember her ironing his shirt? And he said, yes, I remember her ironing our shirts. We didn't know how to iron and she did, so She was ironing the shirts. And she had said that she remembered him saying that she would make somebody a good little wife one day whilst she was ironing the shirts. And he was asked that specific question in the press conference, and he went, no, I don't recall saying that. He said, no, I have no memory of that. And there were a couple of other things that when he was asked to pinpoint specific details, all of a sudden his memory was blank. And so it was a thing like he remembers her, he remembers certain things that they did together, and he certainly remembers not raping her.
Yep. And look, I just want to mention, we've had a break in transmission here. We're talking about the Attorney General, Christian Porter, who has taken leave, and he is the accused. Interestingly, Kate had bipolar. I wonder how that plays into this, you know?
Well, it's... I don't know anyone who's gone through physical sexual abuse and not had some sort of mental illness from it, whether it be depression or bipolar or some other forms of, you know, psychological impact. She also had an eating disorder as well.
Yes.
And you know, she'd been in and out of therapy numerous times in her adult life, all relating apparently to this incident of rape. Now, it's very interesting to me that Christian Porter was very specific in his press conference saying that this rape did not happen.
Oh, he was very insistent on that. Look, we've got to move on soon. I just want to mention, because you probably talked about this while we were not on air, Defence Minister Linda Reynolds has extended her medical leave after she called an alleged sexual assault victim, Brittany Higgins, who is a former was a former staff member or is a former staff member, a lying cow. I want to ask about the fact that these ministers have both taken are both on leave.
One's on stress leave.
Mm-hmm. That's her. No.
Oh, no, they're both on stress leave then.
They're both on stress leave. Hers has been extended to April 2, and his is unended. His doesn't have... He's basically said to the Prime Minister today that I can't tell you when I will be back.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Whoa, yes, I am wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong. It only serves to make me more determined to achieve my final goal. And I come back even stronger, not a novice any longer, 'cause you deepen the conviction. I am
Bondi Tunes International broadcasting from Australia to the world. On Monday, it was International Women's Day. Maurice Payne is the Australian Foreign Minister, and she's also the Minister for Women. She talked on Monday about International Women's Day. Melissa, did you watch that? And do women, with International Women's Day, as a woman, does this, how much does this mean to you? And do you think it's kind of playing lip service, if I dare say that?
I'm in two minds about International Women's Day. Do we have an International Men's Day?
No.
We need a day to celebrate men. So why do we need to be singled out to be celebrated?
It's a very good point.
I would proffer up perhaps the other 364 days of the year, Men's Day.
Yes.
Every day should be bloody International Women's Day. I mean, for heaven's sake, the fact that we get one day a year, we should have a day a month. I mean, if that's what it's going to take to draw people's attention to the plight of women, why are we just focusing on it one day a year? That's not good enough. Mm.
Oh, look, it's absolutely, if we're going to have, the reason for International Women's Day, from what I've seen and what I've read, is it is that one day of the year to formulate where we're at in regards to achieving equality for women. Of course, the battle should be going on every single day of every year until we get to something like equality. But I think a day, the purpose of a day is just around lifting awareness. And it's pretty sad to think that we still need this sort of awareness to be lifted.
I think that's what Melissa's saying, is that why do we have to have this? I mean, if we have to have this, there's a big problem.
Absolutely, there's a big problem. And when you've got a female minister in a government, senior minister of the government, calling a female rape victim a lying cow.
Yeah.
That's the problem. There is the problem.
There's your problem. And it's a female saying that.
Yes. And of course, then the other issue is the week before, last year we had the Prime Minister come out saying that, women who come forward with stories of rape and sexual abuse should be listened to and they must be believed.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are at the very first chance to test that from our Prime Minister. And he has come out and said he asked Christian Porter if he raped the woman. He said he did not and he believes him. So essentially, at the very first opportunity to prove that what he said about believing the victim of sexual abuse as being a fact, he has fallen over, because he has now come out and said she was not raped. Christian Porter did not rape her. She was not raped. She lied.
Melissa?
That is appalling.
I have no confidence in the Liberal government whatsoever. I don't know why... what's her name again? That's on stress leave?
Maurice? Oh, sorry.
Linda Reynolds.
Why hasn't she been fired?
Removed.
First of all, I have heard that Brittany Higgins and her partner have since lost their jobs since the story came out. Not sure how true that is, but I heard that yesterday. And, you know, here we've got someone who's come out to talk about their story and they've lost their job as a result.
It sounds like you're not overly confident in this whole Women's Day thing. I just want to mention a Burger King tweet in Britain. And the tweet is, "Women belong in the kitchen." Now, this caused a lot of criticism by women and men alike around the world. The whole intention was... look, this is so badly done. The whole intention was to attract women to train, as far as I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, folks, to train as chefs of some sort, which I find very strange in Burger King. How bad a mistake was this, or was it really smartly crafted to get international media, PR?
Can I say... as an adolescent, I worked at McDonald's.
Me too.
Typically, the men ran the grills and the women were out the front.
Yes.
So
I was out the front.
Were you?
Yes, well, I was allowed.
But mostly in burger restaurants and KFC, you see the men are out the front doing the food and the women are handing it out. So maybe that's why they want to promote, you know, women in the at Burger King. But come on, what a way to phrase it.
Yeah,
it was. I think it was some marketing executive thinking, we've got a good message to sell here. Let's try and do it in a way that attracts as much attention as possible. Now, the headline they used was stupid. Yes, it's created a lot of publicity for them, but it's not the right sort of publicity. And you know, any idiot would have been able to know that before signing off on this ad going out. But, you know, if all they wanted was publicity, then they've certainly got that from it. But if they wanted positive publicity, if they wanted to sell a message that we're doing something positive for women, they really shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah. And, I do think that I think you're right. I think that was bad publicity. But the truth is, with so much media around, that people just forget this stuff the next day, you know?
Look, possibly in regards to the Hungry Jack's thing or the Burger King ad. Look, I think in the bigger picture of things, when you consider that, you know, we are embroiled in two major rape scandals, separate rape scandals that have sidelined two of our senior members of government, and the Prime Minister's refusing to sack either of them. I think an ad for Burger King is probably a will drop off, and you know, in Australia, I think they probably won't know about it tomorrow. but I think overseas, I think in other places, particularly around, and you know, of course, they did this on International Women's Day because they knew that that would be the day that they would get a lot of attention for doing it. So it was a very calculated, you know, desperate and pathetic attempt to garner some cheap publicity.
And talking of such things, cheap publicity, this was very expensive publicity. It must have cost Oprah Winfrey a fortune, but she's going to make about 100 times whatever was invested in her interview with Harry and Meghan. Melissa, I know you watched this. I think Adam, actually, I thought it was very funny what you wrote to me, Adam. And let me just quote what you wrote. I watched Four Corners instead of the Royals. I got most of the Royals today via the news services anyway. They didn't want a black royal. Kate made Meghan cry. Harry's been cut off by Charles. Camilla and Anne were caught fighting over a fresh bale of hay. Is it that simple, Melissa?
Oh, pretty much. But if you want to talk about International Women's Day, the interview aired on International Women's Day for us in Australia. Meghan was the focal point, and didn't the females online bitch about her?
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe that there was no
sympathy.
Were they
British?
All over. I mean, most of them were British.
Yeah.
But there were nationalities from all over the world that I could see online. I've got a friend who's in Belgium, and posts came up on my feed about the royal story in Belgium. So everyone around the world's had a look at this, and I just can't believe how bitchy women are and how much hatred there is for Meghan out there. And I've got to tell you, I felt sorry for her, and maybe I'm naive, but if I had been treated the way she claims to have been treated, then I think I would want to set the record straight as well. So I went into that interview going, oh, why are they doing this expose? The family's the family. Keep quiet about it. Put your head down. Go on about your business. But I quickly changed my mind when I started watching it and heard what they had to say.
Yeah. Adam, do you... Actually, it's interesting. Serena Williams, the tennis player, she supported Meghan. I heard that the British had a real problem with this, with Meghan. It seems to be, you know, a divide in, you know, from one side of the Atlantic to the other. I just can't help feeling that there's a real reason behind this where Megan is concerned. I mean, she said she was treated really badly by staff. But then they said, well, you know, if you read the Daily Star in Britain or whatever, someone said, you know, a staff member said that she was a total bitch, as in Megan. So, you know, two sides to every story.
Absolutely. And I just think, you know, do we need to know any of this?
No.
Like, it's essentially a private family matter. You've got...
It's a squabble.
You've got a prince who has decided to walk away from being royal and take his young family to another country to live. That's really all we need to know.
Mm.
Why? The background to it?
If you listen to the interview, Adam, the choice wasn't theirs. It was taken away from them. So... for that reason, I understand why they came and did the interview, because everyone's calling it Mexit and blaming Meghan for taking Harry away from his family. But if you listen to their side of the story, that's not what happened at all.
No. And, you know, and I'm sure the truth lies somewhere in between those two stories.
Yes.
We've got the royal side and we've got Meghan and Harry's side, and I'm sure that the truth of actually what happened is somewhere in the middle there.
But final comments.
What I found interesting was Oprah read out some headlines, and the way the media has spun Kate and the way they've spun Meghan are completely different. And Meghan and Kate doing the exact same thing. Glowing reports for Kate, but heavy criticism for Meghan. That's the tabloids wanting you not to like her. That's an agenda right there, is it not?
Yes.
It's... Oh, absolutely. The tabloids, the firm is doing the firm.
I love the way she called it the firm.
They're doing a PR job to destroy Meghan and Harry. Absolutely.
Can I give you an example? They have to do that. There's a picture of both Meghan and Kate, you know, with their hand on their baby bump. And the press about Kate is, not long to go, pregnant Kate tenderly cradles her baby bump while wrapping up her royal duties ahead of maternity leave. And the same caption, the caption for Meghan doing the same thing, why can't Meghan Markle keep her hands off her bump? Experts tackle the question that has got the nation talking. Is it pride, vanity, acting, or a new age bonding technique?
Methinks.
Give the woman a break.
There's some biased activity going on. Guys, we're so over time, as I knew would happen. I would like you to thank both of you for joining me here on Bondi Tunes International once again.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Melissa Grieber and Adam Devlin, thank you so much for joining me. And this is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Boys, they're handsome and strong, but always the first to tell me I'm wrong. Boys try to tame me, I know. They tell me I'm weird and won't let it go. No, I'm fine. Doing. Even after all of this shit, I'm resilient. 'Cause a princess doesn't cry. A princess doesn't cry over monsters in the night. Don't waste our precious time on boys with pretty eyes. A princess doesn't cry. A princess doesn't cry. Burn it like a fire, feel it all inside, but wipe your teary eyes. Princesses don't cry. A princess doesn't cry. best friend says, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, oh, don't cry, don't cry, oh, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, oh. Best friend says, don't cry. I'm fine, I won't waste my time. Keep it in a jar, I won't leave it for the next one. Yeah, I'm fine, I won't waste my time. Keep it in a jar, I won't leave it for the next one. Yeah, I'm fine, I'm lying on the floor again. 'Cause a princess doesn't cry. A princess doesn't cry. Over monsters in the night. Don't waste our precious time on boys with pretty eyes. A princess doesn't cry. A princess doesn't cry. Burning like a fire, feel it all inside. But wipe your teary eyes. 'Cause princesses don't cry. Don't cry, don't cry, oh, don't cry.
Henry O'Donovan, this is Bondi Tunes.
Henry O'Donovan!
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. And I'm Henry on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. I'm joined by our correspondent in the capital city of Australia, Canberra, and that is Peter Herman. He joins me now. Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Oh, I'm all right, Henry. Good afternoon or good evening, listeners. It's 7 p.m. What do they call it? Capital of Australia time or whatever.
it's actually your AEST, Australian Eastern Standard Time. You're on the same time zone as me.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, the only place in the eastern states that ain't on standard time is Queensland, but they're backwards anyway.
Yeah, well, they don't do summertime. That's the thing. Let me ask you something, Peter. Do you watch breakfast television?
Yeah, I watch the ABC breakfast, actually.
Mm. You don't watch commercial television at breakfast?
No. I don't watch commercial bloody TV. Excuse my French. No, I watch the ABC. I'm involved with the Buy Nothing project here in Canberra, and a lady turned around and said to me that she had about a 42 inch plasma TV that they didn't want anymore, and she said to me, if you can fix it, you can have it. So I got it in the bedroom now, and it works like a steam train.
That's fantastic. I love when I get stuff free.
I do too. Oh, I love it. Yes. But anyway, no, I don't watch commercial TV. I'm an ABC man. Why? What's the reason for the question?
Anyway? The reason I'm asking this is because on news.com.au, which is kind of a Murdoch rag. Sorry, that's just my opinion, dear listener. But the thing is, it did a report on a female presenter on a show called Sunrise, which is a breakfast show.
Oh, yeah, she got the sack.
On Channel 7. Yeah.
Morning. Yes.
Yeah. And she was her last day, and she started crying all over the place. And, you know, I'm a broadcaster, you're a broadcaster. And someone, you know, I said, look, why is she crying? For goodness sake, she can get another job. You know, I don't understand the emotion. I left a job as newsreader after 10 years. I didn't cry. And people on social media are saying, well, you're a man. And I'm going, well,
what's the bloody difference?
You can't win, you know? If I said, you know, anything negative about her, I'd get slammed. But it's okay for them to slam me because I'm a man and say, oh, you're a man, you don't cry. Big boys don't cry kind of attitude. And
what a load of crap that is, yeah. Hey, I'm 73, right?
Whoa, yeah.
I cry.
Mm, so do I.
You know, if I see something on television or if I see something that's happening around the town and it hurts me, the tears roll out of my face. In fact, I watch in this Meghan Markle and what's his name?
Prince Harry, I'm so pleased you don't know his name.
What's his name? Harry. But the thing is, I watched part of this thing on TV this morning, and the Pommies got the full gist of the stuff with Meghan Markle and with Harry and all that sort of rubbish. Mm. My godfather, the Pommies are crying poor mouth.
Mm.
You know, the Pommies, wake up, Australia. You know, so Meghan Markle, okay. Now, I can understand how she feels, because here in Canberra, there are so many people here in Canberra that don't like what's been happening over in UK. Now, the UK at the moment are shut down because of the COVID, right? The US, they are shut down because of the COVID, and yet the Pommies won't open up and put on the the antivirus or the vaccine. That's the word I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
The Australians got the vaccine. Where in hell it is, God knows, anybody knows. And in the USA, they're opening up the vaccine now. Two friends of mine who are involved with the antivirus in the USA, and that's a friend of mine who's involved with a hospital in Ohio, mm-hmm. right? He's had the jabber, and his mates had the jabber. Mm-hmm. Now they both had it. Now my missus has had it twice. She's had one lot, and she had the second one. Now, the second one knocked the hell out of her for 14 days. There are so many people in the USA that are getting this, whichever one it is they're getting over in the USA. But the second jabber is causing them a lot more pain than the first one. Like here in Canberra, right, we were told a month ago that we were going to have everybody in Australia, everybody in that's in the age group of 70 and over, we're going to have the virus, the vaccine here in Canberra. Would you believe that the only people that have had the vaccine in Canberra are the ones that are in Canberra Hospital or from the other people that are the front end people are the ones that are the people that are involved with keeping everybody under control and everything. Now we've had Mr. Morrison. And ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Morrison is our Prime Minister, we think. he's turned around and he's MIA, missing in action. He's turned around and said, oh, yes, we're going to have everybody in this, everybody in Canberra is going to have the vaccination. I have yet to find anybody who's seen anybody with the vaccination in Canberra.
And with
Cam, we don't know.
Okay, if you've just joined us, I'm talking with Peter Herman, our correspondent in the capital city of Australia, Canberra. Peter, have you had the vaccine? You mentioned that you're 73 years old. Have you had the vaccine?
No.
Do you want to have the vaccine?
No, because I'll say this. No, I don't want it because here in Canberra, we've had three. People from overseas and three people from interstate in the last 6 months. my doctor, I rang him through the week and I said, have you got the vaccination there? He said, no. Nope.
Mm.
When are you having it? We don't know. Because no one's told us, no one's told the doctors or any of the nurses, even in Canberra Hospital. We don't know where it is.
So you can't go to the hospital in Canberra and get a vaccine, is that right?
Nope. Because they haven't got it there. I'm going to say chow chow for now. I've been on here long enough. Poor old Uncle Henry's got to go and talk to someone else. So we'll catch up with you next time round. And don't forget, by the way, just briefly, I'm now on the board of Valley FM 89.5.
Oh, yes, yes.
I'm now vice president, big deal, of Valley FM 89.5. We are updating our website. We are updating to be able to listen to us.
Are you on FM?
Online, you can catch us on 89.5 FM.
Mm.
And with the new website and the new streaming, you will be able to catch up with us within the next 2 weeks.
Fantastic.
So if you want to listen to me, I turn up at 0600 hours to 0900 hours Monday morning. And for the next 10 weeks, believe it or not, I'm playing tunes from the British invasion, which started from 1962 to 1967.
Mm.
And I've actually bought the 10 CD setup of the British invasion, which cost me all of $5. But I'm playing all the English tracks that made the British invasion and made money for the Poms. Let's put it that way.
Yes, and you're talking when you say the British invasion into Australia musically, yes?
Yes, yes. Yeah. It started off with the Beatles in 1962, and it finished, would you believe, with the Beatles in 1965, and all the tracks I'm playing are 300. We've got 300 hits, and they're all the British invasion, and they're all being played on Valley FM 89.5. And if you tune in between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. each Monday morning, you'll hear me.
And
yes.
that of course is Sydney time here in Australia.
Yes.
So it could be very strange hours wherever you're listening. But that's okay.
Especially afternoon in the USA.
Okay, Peter, thank you for your time.
Thank you very, very much, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time we meet, this is Peter Herman at Valley FM, and also from our good friend here, Henry. And we say, see you later, see you next time we meet, and please stay safe, and please take it easy. Ciao, ciao for now. See you later. Bye-bye.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is...
Henry O'Donovan.